Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham dhammam sangham namassami. Today I was thinking I'll just do a reading of the sutta, just for a change. Just know there's a few, you know, people new to the monastics, young monks and trainees, young nuns. Yeah, and I remember in living in the monastery, there's not a lot that we get access to in terms of the old ways of getting happiness of the world, you know, movies or eating or associating with friends. They're very few. And obviously, ideally, you want to get a lot of your happiness from meditation. But obviously, a lot of people, it takes a long time for the mind to calm down. And the meditation can, you know, certainly go up and down a lot the first few years. So one of the ways to, you know, try to nourish your practice is to find happiness in different things. Happiness in the lifestyle of a monastery. And that can be, you know, trying to learn the trade of a monk, learn your chanting, get happiness from that. Then doing some reading, the teaching of the Buddha. Or you can, you know, obviously read other teachers as well. I always find, yeah, it's always been a source of inspiration, been a source of happiness, just to get to know what the Buddha said and find that how incredibly relevant he is. In the ways he teaches, and it's, you know, 2,500 years ago, 2,600 years ago. Obviously, there's few hurdles to get through, especially reading things, the discourses. That is very repetitive, but it's not meant for you to read, you know, cover to cover. They're very thick books as well. If you haven't noticed. Myself, remember as a young monk, just reading a sutta a day, sutta a couple, you know. Or a couple of sutras a week even or something. So it's not something, a big chunk, but just reading one or two to reflect on different ways. And if you're looking to become a monastic, then the Majjhima Nikaya is a great thing to try to discover, to connect with, to explore, and to get to know. I'm picking a random sutta today. It's not one of the highlights. There's a few, you know, kind of, you know, big sutras that people are always going on about. There's Kosambien Sutta, Sakaja Sutta, the Incontrovertible Sutta. But I'm going to pick not so well-known one and see what the Buddha has to say. The one I'm picking is Sutta number 33. I want to find out where that is. Okay, there it is. The Mahagopaklaka Sutta, which is the greater discourse on the cowherd. People are accused, Achan Cha, always going on and on about buffaloes and cows. Well, you know, Buddha also goes on and on about buffaloes and cows. And it's an interesting sutta. Hopefully there's something there for everybody. Anyway, it starts out, "Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove in Anathapindika's park. There he addressed the bhikkhus thus, 'Bhikkhus,' 'Venerable Sir,' they replied. The Blessed One said this, 'Bhikkhus, when a cowherd possesses 11 factors, he is incapable of keeping and rearing a herd of cattle. What 11? Here a cowherd has no knowledge of form. He is unskilled in characteristics. He fails to pick out the fly's eggs. He fails to dress wounds. He fails to smoke out the sheds. He does not know the ford. He does not know what it is to have drunk. He does not know the road. He is unskilled in pastures. He milks dry. And he shows no extra veneration to those bulls who are fathers and leaders of the herd. When a cowherd possesses these 11 factors, he is incapable of keeping and rearing a herd of cattle.'" You're like, yeah, so what? Well, he relates to what it was like being a monk. So too bhikkhus, when a bhikkhu possesses 11 qualities, he is incapable of growth, increase, and fulfillment in this dhamma and discipline. What 11? He goes through the same list. Here, bhikkhu has no knowledge of form. He is unskilled in characteristics. He fails to pick up flies' eggs. He fails to dress wounds. He fails to smoke out the sheds. He does not know the ford. He does not know what it is to have drunk. Blah, blah, blah. All the way to the end. He shows no extra venerations to those elder bhikkhus of long standing who have gone forth, the fathers and leaders of the Sangha. And then, you know how the Buddha does. He goes to the list of negative first. I'll go with one or two of them. It's nicer to go to the list of positives, okay? But anyway, it starts with the negative. How has the bhikkhu no knowledge of form? Here, a bhikkhu does not understand as it actually is. Thus, all material form of whatever kind consists of the four great elements and the material form derived from the four eight great elements. That is how a bhikkhu has no knowledge of form. Okay, form, everything. You get excited about form, man, woman, child, new computers. It's just for our great elements. Food, just for our great elements. So it's just a good reflection. Obviously, you know, only a fully enlightened being would get not excited over material things. But from time to time, it's good the reflection to bring. Whatever you get excited about, or not excited about, or get annoyed about, it's just the four great elements that you see. Right? Nothing more, nothing less. Okay, so I'm going to read the positive now, not the negative. Blah, blah, blah. Okay,
I want to hear the negative as well.
It's lots of pages. Okay, I'll go with the two of them. Okay, I'll leave brief. Okay. Well, because the negative is just the same. He just, instead of saying he doesn't know, the positive says he knows. That's all he does between the negative and the positive. That's right. Like the second one is, how is the bhikkhu unskilled in characteristics? Okay, not unskilled, right? Here, a bhikkhu does not understand, as he actually is thus. A fool is characterized by his actions. A wise man is characterized by his actions. That's how a bhikkhu is unskilled in characteristics. And then you see the positive of this. The positive goes, how is the bhikkhu skilled in characteristics? Here, bhikkhu understands, as he actually is thus. A fool is characterized by his actions. A wise man is characterized by his actions. That is how a bhikkhu is skilled in characteristics. So yeah, so this is the only thing difference is that one is not and one is. Right? Okay, going on. How does a bhikkhu, I bet you're always wondering, how do we do this? How does a bhikkhu pick out flies' eggs? Right? You're always wondering, what do they do? What does that even mean? Anyway, this is what the Buddha has to say. Here, when a thought of sensual desire has risen, a bhikkhu does not tolerate it. He abandons it, removes it, does away with it, and annihilates it. When a thought of ill will has arisen, when a thought of cruelty has arisen, when evil, unwholesome states have arisen, a bhikkhu does not tolerate them. He abandons them, removes them, does away with them, and annihilates them. That is how a bhikkhu picks up flies' eggs. So it's also going back to the train of, you know, this kind of clarity, being aware of what your mental states are like. And if you know it's unwholesome, you start to steer towards the wholesome qualities. And so it's not just being aware of it, but finding ways to, you know, remove them, abandon them, dies away with them, annihilates them. And that depends on your, you know, you have to know your mind. Sometimes it is, you know, you can, direct it to unwholesome, to more wholesome ways. Other times, just being aware of them, I find, they go away on their own. So a lot of times you don't have to do too much. But that you have to know your own mind. Sometimes you have to do more, sometimes you don't. Just by watching them, they do go away by themselves. And sometimes doing makes them stay around for a long time. So anyway, that's what you do with flies' eggs. How does a bhikkhu dress wounds? Here, on seeing a form with an eye, a bhikkhu does not grasp of his signs and features. Since if he left the eye faculty unguarded, evil, unwholesome states of covetousness and grief might invade him. He practices the way of restraint. He guards the eye faculty. He undertakes the restraint of the eye faculty. And he goes on to the other five sense bases. on hearing a sound with the ear, on smelling odor with the nose, on tasting flavor with the tongue, on touching a tangible with the body, or on cognizing a mind object with the mind. A bhikkhu does not grasp such his signs and features. Since if he left the mind faculty unguarded, evil and unwholesome states of covetousness and grief might invade him. He practices way of restraint. He guards the mind faculty. He undertakes the restraint of the mind faculty. This is how a bhikkhu dresses wounds. I guess, yeah, so he's obviously linking our sense basis to, you know, being how sensitive we are, which is what Ajahn Sumedho talks about a lot. You know, we think it's wonderful to have the six sense basis of, you know, touching, feeling, tasting, hearing, smelling, and thinking. And it brings us a lot of pleasure. But actually, it also brings us a lot of suffering, because it's quite a sensitive organs we have. And it always brings up, you know, reactions, right? Likes and dislikes. So we're too unrestrained in how we perceive the world. We get too excited and looking outward. Then a lot of time we stir up the mind. And that's what the Buddha always said, you know, undertakes this restraint that we make sure we guard it. We make sure that we don't get lost in, you know, perception. Don't get lost in how we perceive different things coming through the eyes, ear, nose, mouth, and different sense bases. And it's interesting here, the Buddha says, you know, the faculties are like a wound. That it gets, you know, it gets touched. It gets very sensitive. It bleeds. It's a source of suffering. How does a bhikkhu, and I bet you're always wondering, how do we do this, right? How does a bhikkhu smoke out the sheds? What that means. Here it is. Here, I don't know how this gets to do with sheds, but this is what the Buddha says. Here, bhikkhu teaches others in detail the Dhamma as he has learned and mastered it. That is how a bhikkhu smokes out the sheds. No idea what that means.
What was the negative one? Maybe because
huh?
What is the negative one? What is it?
How does he not know the shed? That's why. The negative one is, it's the same. He doesn't, okay. How does the bhikkhu fail to smoke out the sheds? Here, bhikkhu does not teach others in detail the Dhamma as he had learned and mastered it. That's how a bhikkhu fails to smoke out the sheds. That's what I mean. It's very similar to the positive. Yeah. So that's the shed. How does the bhikkhu know the ford? The ford, for those non-English speakers, is the river, right? You go to the ford, it's I didn't look that. That's where the water, you cross the water. That's the ford, as far as I know. Here, a bhikkhu goes from time to time to such bhikkhus who have learned much, who are well-versed in the tradition, who maintain the Dhamma, the discipline, and he inquires, and he asks questions of them thus, how is this, Venerable Sir? What is the meaning of this? These Venerable Ones reveal to him what has not been revealed, clarify what is not clear, and remove his doubts about the numerous things that give rise to doubt. That is how a bhikkhu knows the ford. And this is obviously strongly encouraged as young monk or nun, that you do, you know, associate with people who are, you know, well versed in the teaching, but also know who are who has a depth in their practice. In the beginning, a lot of your doubts can be clarified through asking a senior monk or nun about a certain aspect of the practice. But also, as you gain depth in the practice, you know, a lot of those doubts, a lot of questions, has to be resolved by yourself. But certainly initially it's very helpful to talk to other people about the different issues that arise in the practice. Right? So that's how you know the ford.
Sorry, the one before was it teaching the Dhamma? Or
yeah, that's what teaching. Teaching. You teach others in detail the Dhamma as he learned it and mastered it. That's the shed, that's walking on the shed. Yeah, that's the one. That's the smoking shit. Yeah, so mokji. Yeah, this is just, yeah, there's not a really, what do you call it? An order, right? He's just kind of picking different things. And that's why I picked this sutta, because it's 11 things. It looks like it was random. But a lot of it has to do with the, you see, a common teaching of the Buddha about the sense restraint. That's, you read it over and over again, you know, guard your sense faculty. You don't guard it, you know, states of covetousness and grief might arise. So that comes over and over again. So that's something we can always apply on a kind of day-to-day basis. So that is very common. The smoking of the sheds, the teaching, he doesn't talk so much about that in different sutras. But certainly he does encourage young monks to go to more senior monks or other monks who learn much about the Dhamma and the discipline, and to ask questions. Yep. So that's something that...
So the other one is for later on?
No, it's funny, yeah, it must be later, but it's places above. He talks about the sheds first and then the ford. But the shed's the one that you teach in details. You smoke out the shed.
It's about the teaching. I'm asking about the teaching. Teaching as you've mastered it. What if you haven't mastered anything?
That's what I mean. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah, but I say as you learned and mastered it. Yeah. So that's learn and mastered it.
So if you haven't mastered it, shut up.
Generally.
Okay. Good.
Let's. Glad we saw that. Okay. So next going on. How does a bhikkhu know what it is to have drunk? Any guess? Well, along the same theme.
Samadhi?
No. Drunk? Anybody want to have drunk? Drink something. Refreshing. Nourishing. No, it's going along the same with the teaching. He's on the road about teaching, so he goes on about saying teaching. Here, when the Dhamma discipline proclaimed by the Tathagata is being taught, a bhikkhu gains inspiration in the meaning, gains inspiration in the Dhamma, gains gladness connected with the Dhamma. That's how a bhikkhu knows what it is to have drunk. So to be nourishing, to be nourished by it, to be content. And then this is where, you know, reading the sutta comes into play. And it's quite, it's not something, an idealization, something like, oh God. But when you read it, sometimes that certain sutta hits you and you have so much happiness that, you know, powers you, makes the day, you know, more brighter, easier to practice. Yeah. So let's keep in mind, you know, as we practice, look for those different sources of happiness in the holy life. There are lots of it, you know. Doing things for other people, doing things as extra. Some monks, you know, get more energy, they do different things, they get into crocheting, doing different things, and, you know, offering that to different people as well. So just use those different ways of bring a wholesome state of mind and to brighten the mind. So this one is to gain inspiration and happiness from the teaching of the Buddha. Okay, so that is to have drunk. How does a bhikkhu know the road? Okay, this is a road. This is the usual standard he talks about. Here, bhikkhu understands the Noble Eightfold Path as it actually is. That is how bhikkhu understands the road. So the road for Buddhism, for the Buddha, is, you know, the Eightfold Path. So that's the road. Pretty standard. How is the bhikkhu skilled in pastures? This is also standard teaching. He gives a lot. Here, bhikkhu understands the four foundations of mindfulness as they actually are. That's how a bhikkhu is skilled in pastures. These two last issues, there are lots of different sutras that talk about the Eightfold Path in different ways. There are also many sutras also talk about the four foundations of mindfulness, both as obviously key teaching of the Buddha. Yeah. And then this is the practical one. So he goes up, he goes to the theoretical, and then goes back to the practical one. And so it's a bit for everybody here. How does the bhikkhu not milk dry? This is pretty good. How do you not milk dry?
Oh, really?
That's close. Not milk dry? It's close. Huh? Is that your answer for everything, Samadhi? Somebody keeps saying samadhi for everything. No. How does the bhikkhu not milk dry? Here, when faithful householders or anagarikas invite a bhikkhu to take as much as he likes of robes, alms food, resting places, and medicinal requisites, the bhikkhu knows moderation in accepting. That's how bhikkhu does not milk dry. Right? So you don't, someone offer you, make an invitation, you don't go for the moon, right? You don't say, yes, give me more. You don't want to say no. You know, moderation. Obviously, you know, you accept But he also knows when to restrain. Okay, so that's not milking dry people. Yeah, you always have to leave a little bit of milk left. Soy milk, hopefully. Okay, lastly. How does the bhikkhu show extra veneration to those elder bhikkhus of long standing who have long gone forth, the fathers and leaders of the Sangha? Here, a bhikkhu maintains bodily acts of loving kindness, both openly and privately towards those elder bhikkhus. He maintains verbal acts of loving kindness towards them both openly and privately. And he maintains mental acts of loving kindness towards them both openly and privately. That is how a bhikkhu shows extra veneration to those elder bhikkhus of long standing who have long gone forth, the fathers and leaders of the Sangha. Okay. And but this also, you've seen this before. But he just doesn't mention the elder bhikkhu though. He mentioned, you read the other sutta when he talks about the six factors of harmony, and that is to always maintain an attitude of a bodily act of loving kindness openly, privately to, you know, other members of the Sangha. Yeah, not just the elder bhikkhu, but also in anybody you practice with, anybody in the Sangha, anybody you live with, anyone you work with. And so this is kind of a very kind of a clear pattern that, you know, a way to harmony is always, you know, not to foster any kind of negativity, ill will, whether openly or privately. And that, you know, how we talk about each other openly or privately is how we try to, you know, to treat each other with respect and kindness, both privately and openly. And that's fostering community. And this, he points to showing extra veneration to those elder bhikkhus of long standing, who have long gone forth. So when a bhikkhu possesses these 11 qualities, he is capable of growth, increase, and fulfillment in his dhamma and discipline. That is what the Blessed One said. The bhikkhu was satisfied and delighted by the Blessed One's words. Okay. So that's, like I said, the main object of tonight really is just to encourage people, to remind people, yeah, to look at the different sutta that the lot of teachings left by the Buddha, and to try to get to know them, familiarize them. They are, some bits of it can be a bit monotonous and difficult, but like I said, you know, they are an amazing source of joy and happiness. Or especially if you're new to the monastic life, and not to ignore them. Certainly, there's, you know, obviously more recent teachers, Ajahn Chah, and different teachers to read who are very, you know, give you a lot of skillful means in the practice. But I find, yeah, you know, just flipping through the sutras from time to time is a great way to, you know, reconnect with you know, the first teacher of the Buddhism. So, a quick
one. I find that a really, really weird sutta, because it seems to combine so many different stages of accomplishment. It's basically stuff that you can really practice when you just start, like looking up in your mind if sort of sensual desire, sort of the will, or sorts of. From the very beginning, actually, right view basically is a very starting point, huh? on your journey.
But also, I mean, there are different levels, right, of the four foundational mindfulness, right? You can be just being aware of the body, you know, being aware of feelings. I mean, there's sort of sensation, but you can certainly start, anybody can start with the four foundational mindfulness, right? It starts with the body, and that's the beginning, right? You can always be aware of the posture. You don't have to be aware of the more subtle mind-made objects or anything, but you certainly can be aware of, you know, where the Buddha talks about just being aware of, you know, you're walking is walking, standing is standing. When you put in your robe, you know you put in the robe. Yeah, that's part of the four foundation of mindfulness as well. Yeah, sure, it doesn't have to really go all the way to the top of mind objects and the different thing, but it's just, you know, the basic of, you know, sitting in the body, what posture am I sitting, standing, walking. Am I moving? Am I chewing? Am I going to the toilet? That's all part of, you know, kind of the four foundation of mindfulness. Yeah, so I think.
But was it? Did he say one who practices the four foundation of mindfulness, or one who?
No, he just how a bhikkhu is skilled in posture. Here, a bhikkhu understands the four foundation of mindfulness. It doesn't have what level understanding.
Understands.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, understands. Yeah, that's what that's the actually are.
Whatever that means.
That's right. Yeah, sure. That's why he leaves it open. And that's why the reason I kind of picked it to flipping through. One is it's not a well-known sutta, but two, like I said, it's got so many different variety of things that you can use different ones. It's a bit of everything for everybody. You know, you can start it with just, you know, basic of teaching, you know, treating each other with open acts of, you know, verbal and bodily and mental act of kindness, or it goes to, you know, gaining inspiration and just reading the Dhamma or sharing the Dhamma. Yeah, so it's just a variety of different things to, and to kind of reflect and bring into the practice. But mostly, like I said, it's not so it wasn't to concentrate on this particular sutta, but just to really to bring up the reading of the sutta for people, because we haven't talked about much about sutta for a long time. We've been reading other stuff by different teachers, Ajahn Chah, Ajahn Sumedho, and Lumpur Lim, but not really touching specifically on the sutras. Yeah, so that's the reason why I'm bringing up this reading. Yeah. They'll be memorized, obviously. Yeah. That's right. They'll be memorized. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And then that's why in the old days, obviously, the act of memorizing things plays a much larger role in the life of a monk. And these days, because you have the books, there's not so much that we don't spend that much time memorizing. Although I think in Burma and in other traditions, they do spend a lot of time memorizing. Nick was telling me, like, there are monks setting up memorizing the whole Vinaya. And then, you're like, hundreds of them, you know, kind of learning the whole. I mean, Vinaya is also very thick books of, and they set enough to memorize those kind of things as well. But I think from our tradition, the encouragement is, yeah, not so much as memorization. It's a tool to kind of, you know, calm the mind down. It's a tool to bring your mind to a wholesome state, in a way to spend a wholesome time. But the more important to understand it, to understand the meaning of the teaching of the Buddha, and try to bring that into your practice. Not just kind of memorize on a superficial level what it says in Pali or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. But it's true, but but otherwise, in terms of in the Ajahn Chah tradition, mostly the big memorizing we do is just the morning, evening chanting and the Purita. It's nice to memorize some of the Purita. Some monks memorize the Vinaya, the Patimokkha, the 227 rules as well. But that's always a nice thing to do as a Sangha, because it's always nice to have people chant that from time to time. Yeah. Or take turn chanting it. Yeah. So that's the main thing. Questions or comments? Tonight?
Well, I guess the similarities are hard in our time to
appreciate.
To grasp and to visualize and to bring alive, because I'm not a farmer.
Yeah.
And I learned it 2,500 years ago. So with the whole cow signal is only with the eggs, I understand that infestation of the flesh, and when it flies it in the eggs, that stomachs you can remember, you know, what that is. You have to find the right spot in the river to guide them through that fort signal, that they will probably escape very quickly again. So I guess at the Buddha's time, that was something far easier to remember, yeah? These 11 points. Any guy who lived at that time basically can remember what he has to do for his cow. Yeah? So doesn't probably have forgotten 9 or 10 of them tomorrow morning, actually, and maybe one or two will be left of the examples, which is still good enough, actually, 97.
Right, and that was my intention. I wouldn't mean for you guys to remember all 11, but just throw the 11 out there, and different people will respond or react to it in different ways. Yeah, that's the way. I thought it was kind of a nice balance of the different ways.
And the
pastors? No, the pastor is the Eightfold Path.
The pastor
is the Eightfold Path. No. The pastor is Satipanna, yeah. The road, the path. No, the road. The road is the Eightfold Path. The pastors are the Four Foundation of Mindfulness, which big sutras over and over. See, obviously, I didn't memorize it. Yeah. The pastures are the Four Foundation of Mindfulness, which is a major topic. It has its own sangyutta, even. So you can read that based on that. And there are many different ways the Buddha approached the four. He's teaching on the Four Foundation of Mindfulness. It's kind of a massive thing. Lots and lots of commentaries written about it. Lots and lots of books. Lots and lots of forests has been decimated through commentaries. All the books that come out with it. Based on that, so yeah, sure, it's a big topic on itself. But at least, you know, we can all understand it on a certain level. You know, looking at the body and mind complex, and working with it. Questions or comments? Okay, good.
Amandamayam ovada dhamma kataya sadhu karam dadama se.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu,
anumodam. Okay, well, I'll get it.
Arahang samma sambuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivadeni svakato bhagavata dhammo dhamma namasam. Sūpātipānno bhagavato asāvaka-saṅgho saṅghaṁ